Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the IRIS Business Services Q4 FY22 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Siddhesh Chavan from Ernst & Young. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Miguel. Good evening to all the participants on this call. Before we proceed with the call, let me remind you that the discussion may contain forward-looking statements that may involve known or unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors. It must be viewed in conjunction with our business risks that could cause future results, performance, or achievements to differ significantly from what is expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. Please note that we have mailed the results, and the same are available on the company's website. In case if you are not receiving the same, you can write to us, and we will be happy to send them over to you. To pick up through the results and answer your questions today, we have a top management of IRIS Business Services Limited, represented by Mr. Swaminathan, CEO and Founder, K. Balachandran, Founder and CFO, and Mr. Anandaranjan, Co-Founder. We will start the call with a brief overview of the quarter gone past and then conduct the Q&A session. With that said, I will now hand over the call to Mr. Swaminathan. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Siddhesh. Grateful to everyone who has actually joined the call today. I'm actually in a country called Gabon, which is in Western Africa. I'm here with a delegation led by India's Vice President, Venkaiah Naidu. I'm leading the business delegation for about 12 people here as part of our efforts to grow overseas. So in the middle of the whole thing, my call drops. You know why. So please bear with me. So as far as last year goes, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled with the performance. I mean, you can say I'm being very perverse. What is this? Profits have dropped. EBITDA has dropped. Sales have dropped. How can I be happy? If there's one thing I've learned in the last 5 years interacting with shareholders is that there are different kinds of shareholders. There are some people for whom a dividend play is the right company to invest in. And there are people for whom a growth play is the kind of company to invest in. There are people who are short-term. There are people who are long-term. There are people who are holding forever. There are people who are trading during the day. So I think a company cannot please all kinds of investors. And these earnings calls are also opportunities for us to discover the right kind of investor for companies like us. So there are two reasons why a company's revenues drop or do not increase as much compared to previous year. One, because of reasons outside our control. And one, because of reasons within our control. If you look at the kind of business we're in, we are, to a large extent, prisoners of regulatory overhang, regulatory initiatives. So the fact that there haven't been too many regulatory initiatives, actually none at all, in the last few years, has affected us badly, shrinking our collect business. As far as the create business is concerned, we have done extremely well based on our own, we've actually exceeded our own expectations. I mean, traveling revenues in the US. And many of you will understand that, the early days when you get success, to get success is very difficult. Once you have established something, getting success is very, very easy. So I think the fact that you've traveled from a very small base and done reasonably well is a source of great satisfaction. And the same thing in Europe, where we have doubled our revenues. We've lost customers in South Africa because the regulator gave them extra time to file. That's not within our hands. We've also lost customers in the UK, where we learned the hard way, the problems of being concentrated with one customer. We used to work with one firm which gives a lot of UK customers, and they suddenly decided to take a lot of these things in-house and use a different tool instead. So we lost a few customers there. Welcome to reality. But having said that, we've used the year extremely well. We've come out financially very, very, very strong. We have cleared off, you've heard me say in every call about the dues to employees and my debt of gratitude to employees for having put up with us for so long. I'm happy to report that except for about 15, 20 lakhs of employee dues where we cannot find my old colleagues, who have gone to other countries and who are not traceable, every rupee owed to every employee has been cleared. And I am, except of course the founders, the three of us are still owed some money. It's not a lot of money, but still owed to us. And because of that, I'm now finally able to take a salary. And this is the high point as far as I'm concerned for the year that just passed. When you look at the company, you look for indicators in terms of whether the company is getting stronger or getting weaker. And I think from my point of view, and you're welcome to agree or disagree, from my point of view, the fact that I'm getting salary is the most powerful signal I can send to the world outside about the health of the company. It's not a huge amount of money that I take as salary, which you will know from the annual report, But having said that, even that was difficult to pay for some time. And the fact that I'm now finally taking it is the clearest indication as to where we are going and what we think the company's up to. So that for me is a leading indicator. You know, when I provide data, people use data in different ways, and people look at the data very differently depending on the perspective they come from. You know, some people look at something and say it's half full, some people look at something and say it's half empty. So it's up to you to decide what you want to look at. Our job is to present the data to you and then see whatever you want to do with it and help you navigate it and look at it the way we look at it. I mean, it doesn't mean the way you look at it is the way you want to look at it. So that's where we are. I think we're financially much, much stronger than before. Salaries are being paid on time. Everything happening on time. And, you know, the fact that so at current performance, we'll throw 45 crores of cash next year. At current level of performance. But fortunately, the COVID overhang is going away for us. Regulators are back in action. There are tenders that we are bidding on in different parts of the country. This is my first trip overseas in the last 5-4 years since COVID started. And it's not that Gabon is waiting to jump into the GRL phase. In the first phase, you need to explore. So there are leads that we had in the past which have gone first. So we need to get back and get those leads back and try and cultivate them. So that's exactly what we're trying to do right now. So in terms of numbers and financials, I will let Balu take over from now. But if I drop out in the middle, please bear with me. I'm in a different country altogether, where the connectivity, while it's decent, can still be slightly erratic. Over to you, Adam.
Thank you very much, Swaminathan. I hope all of you can hear me. Siddesh, you can hear me?
By the way, this is the only... Balu, once again. By the way, for those of you who don't know, this is the only time Balu is calling Swaminathan. He has a different name for me. So thank you, Balu. Go ahead.
Okay, so we are listening, all of you can hear me. So, good evening and good to meet you, all of you, after a gap of 6 odd months. I hope many of you would have seen our initial presentation, which was uploaded a few years ago on the exchange website. I hope a few of you have seen that. So, now quickly run through the highlights of the financial performance for the financial year ending in March 2022. Like in the previous meetings where I have, belabored this point, I'll dwell more on the moment of our annual numbers. Since our kind of business, tends to give a clear picture when seen through the prism of a longer, time period. Now, if I look at the numbers per se, you'll see that, we moved pretty much in tandem or pretty much in line with our 9-month trend. And this was, maintained for the 12-month period as well. Our top line has moved a little slowly, by around 8% compared to the corresponding year. While the revenue moved up by 8%, overall expenses, all that of course depreciation and interest cost, increased by a higher proportion by as much as 18%. Within this, employee cost moved up by about 12%. Now you could see, that this increase looks high, especially compared to the corresponding period. But one should keep in mind that this was also onset of the COVID pandemic the previous year. And we are very parsimonious in terms of spending and about, and when it came to, preserving liquidity, we are very bothered about that. So we had a low base and on which expenses did move up. I should maybe point out one aspect of our overall trajectory as a publicly traded company. We IPO'd somewhere in 2018. If I look at the last 5-year time frame, you will find that our revenues have moved at a CAGR of about 18% over the last 5 years. While expenses, have moved up at a much lower rate, at around 11%. And this has been accomplished with a very modest resource base. We did the pivot into a product-based business during this period, quite effectively. And let me come to the revenue analysis. I mean, if you look at the segment of revenues, you can see that correct segment, which is one of our flagship segments, revenues are dipped by about 12%. While the emerging and more durable, enduring great segment continued its robust growth by posting a 26% growth rate. Our annual recurring revenue, which is a very important metric, has moved up by about 19%. As we are higher than 90% if you look at a growth basis. But on a net basis, let me say it has moved up by 19%. While the share of recurring revenues has also moved up quite significantly. It's now at 78%, up from 76%. The other thing which I want to point out is that if you look at our revenues geographically, you will find that our revenue share from the US and European markets, these are sophisticated demanding markets, have moved up smartly. And this particular growth has come primarily because of traction gained by our IRIS Carbon SaaS platform. Let me dwell on a bit on the trust segment. Swami did mention that collect cement segment is slowly coming out of a freeze in RFP activity that we foresaw and we experienced during the last 2 years. And I would say that this offers was very much there during the whole of FY21 and even to a very large extent in FY22 as well. There have been some emerging activity as far as public sector money is concerned, as far as regulatory RFPs are concerned over the last few months, and we are cautiously optimistic to expect an improvement in our new RFP pipeline going forward. In the recent months, having said that, we have been awarded work on enhancement of our own platforms, one in Malaysia and one in Kuwait. And of course, we had announced this through Exchange Funding Center. Before I wind up, let me mention from a balance sheet perspective, we have been consistent in making it tighter. We have seen a further improvement in receivables. Receivables has a number of days. Liabilities have been paid as well. And Swami did mention that we paid almost all employees, employee dues as well. And cash point of view, we are at the point where we were last month, and we expect better days ahead. So that's a short summary of what we have done in the last 1 year. And back to the moderator. Thank you.
By the way, I'll take it back from here. So I'm going to anticipate a few questions that will definitely come up and ask them first. So the rights issue. We made an announcement about the rights issue. Why did we not do a rights issue just yet? Simple reason. About 3-4 months ago, we saw the trend in the revenues, and we basically said we would like the market to price in our performance before we do the rights issue. Is the rights issue on? Absolutely yes. When you look at the numbers that Balaji shared with you, he talked about 8% growth in revenues. I've always been saying constantly that if I don't raise any money, we will grow between 10-15%. Now, if you factor out the fact that South Africa deferred their filings, so if you take a look at our difference between gross revenue and net revenue, that's about 3.25 crores, of which the bulk of it, or an overwhelming percentage of it, is actually on account of deferment of Africa, where the revenues did not accrue this year, it will happen next year. And of course, hoping that we retain our clients. We've not lost the clients. So it's more a deferral of revenue which we did not recognize, and since it happens once a year, it was not quite recognized either. So if you factor that in, our growth would be between 11-12% in terms of revenues. So we've actually said we grow 10% or 10-15% without fundraise, and that stands. And why did we have to postpone it? Why, what about the pricing end? As promoters, we don't have the money to subscribe to rights issue. We always said this. Now, if I had done the rights issue and we had not subscribed, somebody would have actually screamed, saying, what sort of nonsense is this? Promoters knew in advance and therefore they did the rights issue and they pulled the wool over our eyes and all that stuff. I don't want to get into that. We take great pride in our governance. We take great pride in our transparency, which often comes to hurt us. We are willing to put up with it because transparency for us is not because the market wants it or because shareholders want it, but the transparency is because we want to create a great company going forward. We want to create a great company that has continued to survive only because of the transparency that we have internally and externally. And that's exactly what we want to do. So the rights issue will happen. I hope people support the rights issue. The rights issue is not a means of giving largesse to our shareholders. So it will not be priced at significant discount to market. It may even be premium to market. We don't know. It could be premium, it could be discount. No, discount it will come. It could be at market. So basically, please be aware that the rights issue will happen. We will now start working on it, now that the markets, hopefully by the end of the day, markets have priced the performance already. And the idea is to basically raise money that will put us on a bigger growth path. Now, why is we need the money? We need the money because we want to grow in certain markets or new initiatives. You might have seen one of my tweets a couple of days ago where the US government, the US SEC, the US government actually, the US Congress and Senate are now expanding the scope of XBRL reporting in the US. Now, in the SEC world, the filing started way back in 2008. snatching away existing customers from other vendors is more difficult than starting a fresh course in a new opportunity. So the reason why the US revenue has doubled is because we went after the new opportunity last year, the energy market opportunity, where we did extremely well. The reason why the Europe revenue has doubled is because we actually went after a new opportunity with the ESEF mandate. It's the ISVR filing, the capital market regulator. We've always done well in new market, in new mandates, because it's also much less expensive to catch customers in new mandates, and it's much more expensive to catch to swing customers away from existing vendors in old mandates. There are several new mandates coming in different parts of the world. You might have seen filings from some filing buyers which talked about how even Government of India is looking at moving to standards-based reporting across the country. In fact, several tenders have been issued in that context. We've lost some for reasons that don't make us very happy, because very often the regulators do not understand the significance of SBR filings, and they start to use a ground-up solution as opposed to buying a ready-made solution. But that's fine, you live with it. So the rights issue is still long. I want to mention this because this is a question that will actually come up. Second point I want to make is many shareholders keep writing to us asking for information that we cannot share and we will not share. Now, very often, if these questions come which require detailed information, if there's an earnings call close by, we will address the questions at the earnings call and not do individual answers. So please bear with us. With that, over to you, moderator.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Participants who wish to ask a question may kindly press *1 on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press *2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Please press *1 to ask a question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Yeah. We have the first question from the line of Rohit Koti from Marshmallow Capital. Kindly proceed.
Thank you for the opportunity and thank you for the detailed commentary as always. My first question is on UK. So first, if you could give us an idea of what was the quantum of revenue that was lost because of our customer moving everything in-house. And a follow-up there is, if you could also detail why did we lose the deal? Because as is discussed in the presentation, we consistently ran near the top in terms of quality, and we have been a bootstrap operation, so we should be among the lowest cost providers of the software as well. Swamisa did mention that they are using a new tool. So what made us lose, or what cost is this particular deal that source of revenue that we had historically? And does it also call into question the partnership model that we have been using heavily across other markets? So is there a risk of something similar happening in Europe and US or any other location where we have done really well in the past?
Rohit, first of all, it's good to know that you now have a company name associated with your name, which I did not know about. So congratulations. It looks like you formed a company. Or have you joined somebody? I don't know. We'll come to the question later. So before I pass on the question to a couple of things, I think the biggest lesson is don't put all your eggs in one basket. In the UK, we had one partner. We didn't lose customers. The partner decided to take most of the work in-house, a lot of the work in-house. I think the impact on the revenue is about ₹1 crore. Valerie will confirm this. So it's not very, very significant. But having said that, we also made up elsewhere in the US, not UK, not that much. The quality thing you talk about is in the US SSD market. In the UK unlisted company market, there are no quality reports of any kind. Yes, we are a low-cost provider, but we are not the lowest-cost provider. There are people offering at even lower cost. As somebody said, in the UK, currently, ISVR filings are available for free as breakfast coupon cereals. If you buy some cereals from Kellogg's, you have to end up getting a breakfast coupon saying this. I'm just joking, but that's really how low the cost has become in the UK. So I don't know why we lost them, but there are opportunities coming up. The lesson that we learned from this, don't put all your eggs in one basket. In the UK, we had one customer passing on a significant number of companies to us. This has been a rude jolt for us. The good thing is the customer really has said that he's not going to exit immediately with all the companies. They're going to exit over a course of 2-3 years. So we will gradually see a lowering of the revenues. But the impact in terms of the companies on the net impact will not be very significant. Now, since Deepta handles this directly, I'll let Deepta take the question and answer the way she wants to. Deepta.
Thank you. Hi, Rohit. So, just to give you a little bit of background on this UK business loss, The UK mandate, the UK IXBRL mandate, the business registry mandate, which went live in 2011. So it's been over a decade. So at that time, we signed up with one large customer, who's a large consulting firm, and they had a whole clutch of companies for whom they were offering these IXBRL solutions, basically. Right? So converting the documents into IXBRL. Now, as a policy, this large consulting firm never actually concentrated all of their business with any one partner. So they had 2-3 different partners through whom they were working and processing these files, basically. We were one of them. Amongst the partners, we were told that we actually were the best in terms of quality. I think this large consulting firm decided to stop taking some of the business in-house. Actually, very honestly, they never expected that this IXBRL solutions or services would last this long. They thought it would all become integrated as perhaps an accounting package, and it would become all very routine. So they themselves didn't expect it to last this long. At the end of a decade, they decided that they wanted to start pulling some of the business in-house. Apparently, what we learned is that they already dropped all the other solution providers and other partners, vendors that they have, and we were the only one in the fray. They also said that given that the relationship was this strong, so it is not that they switched in favor of another solution, they were also processing some internally themselves anyhow, because they always wanted that as kind of a backup. But I think they got a mandate or a requirement internally saying that let's now consolidate all of this internally. So they came back to us and they said that given our relationship is very strong and they said we'd like to do this in a phased manner. We would like to reduce the number of files of our customers that we pass on to you. And at steady state, they expected to drop down to about a third of where it was at current level. So we see that playing out over the next 3 years or so. This mandate is an old mandate. So we are, of course, the lesson of the learning for us is never concentrate risk with one partner in one geography. So the more diversified one can get with multiple partners, and the more direct end company one can have, the better for us. But when we contracted this, of course, we were way smaller. We didn't have the ability to go direct, and we had just this one partner. We are now focusing our energies on the UK market. There are two mandates over there. There is a new mandate, which is the ESEF mandate, as you know, and there is this one as well. This is the old, what we call the HMRC mandate, the tax and the revenue mandate. So we are looking to see whether we can kind of get business in. We are getting in a small way as well. But like Swaminathan already explained, for the US market, when you're in a replacement market after such a long time, it's probably likely to be hard unless we're able to swing in a couple of bigger partners at this point in time. So that's the long story. And that's the lesson
of the learning. And Rohit, on the overall thing, it's about the total revenues from the UK market from SMRC filings was never more than 2-3 crores anyway. So in the larger scheme of things, it's insignificant. But in the larger scheme of things, it's a slap on the face and lesson for us to learn. And so the good thing is that we have enough partners in every other market to be able to withstand yours and the sufficiently diversified in the sense. In a market, you can't go direct and also go with partners. It creates a channel conflict. With the partners always look at you and say, what if you go behind my back and so on and so forth. So it's been a challenge. You have to walk on literally eggshells to get there. And we are doing that. I mean, I can't, but we seriously upfront because, it's a fear that we always have, and the fear has come true.
Fair enough. I mean, this is very helpful and detailed answers from all of you. So just a follow up there. One of the things that was mentioned was that the expectation is that over time, such an XBRL solution is integrated into a accounting package or something along those lines. So how serious is that specific risk for, let's say, the Europe and the US market that we are extremely excited about today?
But
Deepa also said that over the last 12 years it's not happened, and that's the reason why they're taking this house. I think there's an answer in it somewhere as well. So keep that in mind.
Very true. So, there are two parts to the answer. One is obviously, it has not happened the way people had anticipated. They thought it would become so seamless that it would just go into accounting packages. And like this partner of ours said, it has not happened in the last 12 years, and they don't foresee that happening, right? They themselves are taking this in-house, so they are setting up a practice for this. That's one part. The second part is the difference between this HMRC mandate and the Europe and the US mandates that we are so excited about, for example, is that the HMRC mandate works on a simple taxonomy and is a fixed taxonomy, which theoretically could have been kind of automated, which was not, by the way. And the more complex mandate is far more of a challenge, and in a more complex mandate, it's not only numbers that theoretically can pick out of an accounting package, but there is also a lot of narrative and texts and reports, etc. So if it was difficult in this one, it's close to impossible in the other one. Or I should not say close to impossible, we take a heck of a long time, I think.
Rohit, the other thing is that, the cost of doing it in-house using an integrated tool, the cost of integrating it internally is much greater than the £150-£200 you actually pay for using a third-party tool to do the whole thing. So would you buy a road roller to break a protection net? Absolutely not. A hammer would actually do. So it's cheaper to buy a hammer than to buy a road roller. So integrating internally is like buying a road roller. Using a hammer is what solutions like us are all about. That's what I think our partners realize. So partners basically said, I will have my own tool, I'll have my own way of doing things. I don't need you. Thank you very much.
Understood. Okay, perfect. So this is very helpful. So next, if you could elaborate a little more on how you see things with the existing and implemented mandates in Europe and US. So with the ESF ESMA mandate, am I right in assuming that the you had, let's say, 30-40 clients coming free for the first year. Assuming that the entire client base that we have
converted
right now.
They were all converted to paying clients. Everybody.
Oh, okay. So going forward, it will be equivalent to, going forward will be like the, how the US SEC has been over the last, since 2008, in the sense that you have a fixed client base and it will be very difficult to grow them as far as the current ESMA mandate is concerned. Am I right?
That's a fair statement, but I will finish your full question before I answer. But that's a very fair statement.
Okay, so that was number one. And second is, when is the ESG going to be implemented as part of the ESMA mandate in US and in Europe? And I'm also curious, because I'm talking about ESG, so how much of a difference for filing in pricing is there for ESG filing? Because as you mentioned, the GAAP has used you for ESG filing, the first ESG filing they've ever done. So how was the experience? How was the realization difference as compared to a normal filing that you've been doing in US and Europe?
I'll let Balu take the ESG question. And as far as, harvesting our existing clients more, I'll come back to the question later. First, let Balu take the ESG question. Balu?
Well, I would maybe request Geeta to take this question as far as GAAP is concerned and as far as the experience that we have working with GAAP.
Sure, Balu. So
Balu, the question was about ESG and not about GAAP, Balu.
Okay, no, the experience of working with GAAP. Okay. On the ESG side, maybe I can answer in on two parts. One is the European mandate for ESG filing. It is expected to start in 2024. The exact calendar is yet to be out. And it is going to cover companies, both private and public. Right now, the IFRS Spin Foundation, which is looking at the entire ESG or climate financing area, is in the process of creating the standard. And we expect the clear taxonomy, which will be an inalienable part of it, to come out by end of this year or early next year. So that's when the mandate could start, rolling out on a voluntary basis. As far as the GAAP situation is concerned, the GAAP activity is concerned, the GAAP activity, happened because they want to do a report in HBR on a voluntary basis, and that's where we stepped in, and we worked with them to create that. Maybe if you want to expand a little bit on that particular process.
So as Babu has already said, GAAP wanted to voluntarily create its ESG report in a digital machine readable format. And So they were looking to do that. They were looking for a tool that could help them do that as well. And there was a FASB taxonomy which was already available from the US. So FASB actually connected GAP with us, because the existing tool that GAP was using is using for its SEC filings and the other filings wasn't ready with the ESG taxonomy, with the FASB taxonomy, while Carbon was already ready. So they decided to do this on a voluntary basis and create the report. They were very, very happy with the experience, actually. So they are obviously providing kind of, you know, testimonials and references. But it's early days, because it's not a mandate as yet. They're putting out a small case study, and they're also Tom Collins. They're also happy about the fact that their report in this digital format is benefiting us as well.
So what Dita basically said is the following, that when you have multiple mandates for the same company, it's advantageous to have a tool that covers everything. And if you can be quick off the ground, then there are possibilities that people will actually switch to you. So while GAP may have been using somebody else for their SEC filings, the fact that they now use ESG gives us an in into that. So when you talk about the first question that you asked about the limitations in terms of what we can grow, how we can grow in the US or Europe in these situations, I think as more and more mandates happen, and I think, I don't know whether you've seen my tweet on the US Congress and Senate passing a new law expanding the scope of SBR filings, when those things happen, I think we are in a very good spot. We are actually in a very good spot, basically because we are usually very quick off the ground with our R&D team, integrating newer and newer filings into it, like we did with the ESG filing, which got us this GAP mandate. I think you should call it something else, because people will confuse GAP for General Accounting Principles, GAP, the company in this case. So your question, I hope the question got answered. The fact that we have other possibilities from Carbon brings in customers into us. And secondly, also keep in mind the size of our company. We are still very, very small. So adding, you know, 5 crores, adding $100,000 is exactly what? 35 lakhs. Adding $500,000 is what? 3.5 crores. So given the size of our company, the growth that we seek is not daunting. So even switching is possible, and adding new filings is also possible.
Perfect. So one part of the question which was, what would be, let's say, a rough realization difference when it is just a normal XBRL filing for a listed company versus when an ESG package also included as part of it? So could you share that number if possible?
Balu?
So we haven't at this point of time given a number to any of our customers who are working with us on a voluntary basis. But my expectation is, it won't be dramatically different. That's my expectation, but we need to discover this in the market.
Sure, that's helpful. Comical touched upon growth. So, I mean, I'll ask this last and get back into the queue. So in the past, as you mentioned, that we can easily grow at much higher rates with adequate funding. Would it be fair to assume that the statement still holds very much true, and we're waiting for the cash flow from this year as well as the rights issue to accelerate ourselves on the growth path? Would it be a fair statement to say that?
Totally, totally. And also one more thing I want to add to this is, the interesting thing here is a couple of adjacent products. For example, let me stop a little. Rohit, you're an investor in the capital markets for a long time?
Yes.
Have you ever used XBRL data?
No, I have not yet.
Is that an opportunity for us?
Sure, that is true, yes.
If every listed company you invest in teaches you how to use XBRL data in your investing behavior, would that help?
Sure, yeah, it would help, yes.
Would every investing company, sensible investment company, would therefore, now that they are filing in XBRL, want to do that?
Agreed.
There's your answer. That's our hook.
Okay, so this is probably the consumed section that you're talking about here, right?
Absolutely right. On which we've invested tremendously, which is what brought us down to losses, and that's where we need to focus to acquire new customers. Apart from adjacent filings, learning to use XBRL data is also a huge possibility.
Perfect. I'm sorry. So one last question before I go back into the queue. So in the past also, Swami, so you mentioned that you've lost tenders in India. You mentioned IRDA, which I think Wipro won in the past. And even in this call, you mentioned that you've lost a few. So historically, we've always maintained that in collect segment globally, we have only 3-4 competition, and we generally win 45-50% of the tenders. So other than RBI,
55.
What? Yeah, 55. Okay.
55%.
55%. Okay. So what's happening in India though? So, why is it difficult for us to win tenders other than the RBI ones? We have consistently been there, I think, for more than 10-15 years now.
The ignorance of the regulator is the biggest problem, and the tendency to want to develop bespoke solutions. So very often people don't understand the importance of data standards. They think electronic filing is enough. They think electronic filing is all that they need to do. That myth has now been busted with the CAG report, which says it's not enough to collect electronic data. It's important to have common data standards. That's a very significant report, the CAG report. If you don't have it, I will happily send it across to you. It's going to become law very soon. And when that happens, in fact, already Meitin has issued some report 2 days ago about governance and data standards. So the ignorance of the regulator and the unwillingness to recognize the benefits that RBI has gave, which RBI knows all about and confirms all the time, that's where the problem lies. I think when that changes, and therefore, they all think it's some very big software project that needs to be implemented. And we lose out to the big four. So they set conditions which ultimately ensure that only the big IT companies can actually bid for it. But IT services companies. We still have an IT services mentality in this country. That needs to change, and that hopefully will change. So we are confident. But one thing is very clear, this I must say. During the COVID period, the biggest lesson that we also learned is that we can't ignore the domestic market. So we have some creative ideas in terms of what to do. So you will actually see some significant initiatives that we actually take in the domestic Indian market to grow our revenues here. So don't be surprised if you see us coming out of the woodwork in a few areas, and not just in GST, but a few other areas as well.
Thank you so much. I'll get back to visit with you.
Sure.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. To ask a question, you may press star followed by 1 on your touchtone phone. Participants are requested to please press star 1 to ask a question. Swami sir, presently there are no questions in the queue. We have got a follow-up question, sir, from Rohit Koti himself. Okay. Please go ahead, sir.
Rohit, can we pause for 1 second? Rohit, can you pause for a second? I want to say something else.
Sure, Swami sir.
Okay. So Balu, you would have seen that those mails from shareholders were asking various questions which we did not reply to for a variety of reasons. Can we take some of those questions so that at least the shareholders are happy?
Yeah, sure. We could do that.
Balu, you have the file, you know. Maybe you can hear the question and you can decide you take it.
Beg your pardon? What did you say?
I said maybe you can read out the question one by one and then we can decide who will take it.
Okay. So there's a question from Vikas Khanna, and that says, I would like to know the progress of subsidiary made by the company in the GST space. How many clients are added and how many more ERP partners is the company collaborating with?
Gautam, are you there? Gautam? Gautam, will you take the question? Gautam, not only will you take the question, I also want you to talk about the IRP because many people might want to know about the IRP, but they don't really know yet.
Okay. So the question is, what is the progress made on the subsidiary made by a company? So this is Iris Logics, which is a subsidiary which focuses on the app for the transporter segment. So currently, we have 165 subscribed transporter companies who are actually using the app. So these are regular subscribers, either take a quarterly or annual subscription. And in terms of number of ERP partners, you've got 4 partners with whom we have tied up. But a bulk of our subscriptions are direct subscriptions. ERP would be making for about 15% of the total subscriptions. That's on the Logix, which is a subsidiary. To talk about IRP, so IRP stands for Invoice Registry Portal. As you must be aware, e-invoicing is now mandatory for issuing of invoices, all B2B invoices. The mandate was rolled out in 2020. It started with 500 crore companies and has subsequently the threshold has been reduced. Now it's 20 crore companies. About 3 lakh GSTNs currently come under the GA, under the e-invoicing mandate. And the government has actually seen the benefits of e-invoicing by plugging up the revenue leakage, and we see these in the monthly tax collection figures, which have been constantly going up. So there's an intent and there's a need to make e-invoicing pervasive across for all B2B transactions. Government is also talking about making e-invoicing for certain B2C category of invoices. And that's where the long tail of taxpayers come in. Almost about 95% taxpayers who are currently not covered. This would require having substantial infrastructure or IRP system in place, which is able to handle the load and the request which is coming in. Currently, NIC is the only registered e-invoicing service provider in the country. And in the 42nd GST Council meeting, it was decided to appoint private IRPs who would actually perform the same role as what currently NIC is doing. A process for selection of the IRPs started about 8 months back. About 100 companies had applied, 30 were shortlisted, finally 17 presented, and a full-fledged demo of the IRP application was made. And finally, 4 companies have been awarded with a license to become an IRP. Currently, it's a provisional license. Once the agreement is signed, you get the final license. So, and IRIS is one of the 4 which has been selected. So once we become an IRP, we actually move a notch up from being just a GST which is connecting to a NIC or a GSTN system. We come at par with the NIC system and become one of the 5 IRPs which can actually generate e-invoice on our own. So next time, if an e-invoice has been generated and signed by IRIS, one can actually sign, you know, scan the QR code and see that it's signed by IRIS. What does it mean? From an overall opportunity perspective, there is e-invoice. The generation of e-invoicing is a government mandate, so it has to be offered for free at zero cost, which is what NIC is doing, and the private IRPs will also need to do the same. But private IRPs are allowed to provide VAS on top of the basic e-invoicing data, and that is where we see an opportunity, because there are lots of gaps and needs in the industry from an overall automation of the entire AP cycle and the AR cycle, as well as the value of an e-invoicing data for flow-based lending. This is all going to be, you know, once a supplier is giving a consent to take a VAS, the data can be stored by the IRP and the services can be offered on top of it. So that's where we see a big opportunity and an opportunity to play a role in actually digitizing the entire commerce chain of the country.
The real story here is not just the fact that we got it, but when you look at the list of companies who bid for it, which is Who's Who of India and who did not get it, only 4 of us got it. And the fact that only 4 of us got it tells you something about how good we are or what people think about us. To convert it into an opportunity is where the challenge lies. It comes back to the same thing. I'm like a stuck record. The amount of money that you have in the bank will drive how successful we are. So at the presentation, one of the companies, which is a loss-making company, one of the new age companies, and told, they basically mentioned that if you have any doubts about us, look at our balance sheet, look at 500 crores. So the same question was asked of us, you know, they have 500 crores, how much do you have? Well, not even 5 crores. So for us to be successful, we need to have a watch list. And not only to have a 500 crore watch list, but we need to have a watch list. And I hope, therefore, that when the right issue happens, we will get subscription from the shareholders in a manner which allows us the comfort that we can fight the battle. You know, to fight the company over 500 crores, you don't require 550 crores. You basically need to be smart about what you spend and how you spend it. You need to have a great product and you need to have the trust of your customers. And that's exactly how we go about doing things. We've learned how to do things in the cheapest possible way and in the most inexpensive possible way. And that's what we'll continue to do. And this again goes back to what I told you, Rohit, about adjacent possibilities that come up, which allows us to snatch customers. In fact, we also have So for we not only the IRP, recently MCA launched, MCA basically said some time ago about some past approval for vanishing companies. So Gautam, we also spent something about vanishing companies, the product that we have, and also the legal system. We talk about both, Gautam.
Correct.
And for each of these things, shareholders, for each of these things, you might want to know that we have 5 new customers to whom we can actually go with the existing suite of products. So these are both very important products which have been launched. Both of it are getting some traction in the market. It's slow, but it's happening. Gautam.
Correct. So NCA has come up with a regulation that if a company is dealing with any counterparty which is struck off, it needs to be reported in their annual report filing. If you look at the current NCA website, there is no common source or there is no place which actually lists all the strike-off companies. The list of strike-off companies get uploaded in a PDF file by independent ROCs, there were 25 ROCs in the country. So what we did was we actually downloaded all the list of strike-off companies and I put it to a database and run a smart search. So where any company can actually come and just upload a Excel file with the company which they are dealing with, and we give you a name match whether the company is actually struck off or not. It just makes it easier for secretarial or for the finance team which is actually working on it. We've called it as Iris Lookup. So this is the first feature we have looked at in Iris Lookup, which is searching for struck off companies. Now that we see there's a good demand and there's a good interest, we have about 65 plus companies which have taken subscriptions. It's a completely DIY mode. Once the product is made, there's nothing, it runs on its own. So there's absolutely no team or involved in it. And this gives us an opportunity to actually cross-sell. Upsell, out of the 65, more than 50% are first-time customers for IRIS. So this gives us an opportunity to actually start selling our GST solutions, our NCA filing solutions. And we'll be also looking at adding more features within Lookup through GST search, through GST compliance scoring and returns filing and PAN search and things like that. All public information where any enterprise needs utility to do a bulk search and get returns or reports immediately, this is what Lookup is going to do. So that's our first product, which is Iris Lookup. The second one is Iris Litigation Management System. Post GST, a lot of things changed for companies to actually manage the litigation, especially if one is a services company. One has to now take GST registrations across all states. Earlier, there were different laws for VAT, excise, service tax, state-specific taxes. The GST regime completely changed the whole thing, going to a faceless audit and a faceless assessment mechanism. So we have built this tool, which is a SaaS-based platform, in collaboration with one of the leading firms, which exercises itself in GST litigation. It's a tool which actually manages, tracks your entire litigation cycle, starting from an audit stage to show cause notice and goes all the way till the time the case is closed or a settlement is made, leading all the way up to Supreme Court order. So this is a very detailed and this is again a tool which is targeted for large enterprises which is managing a lot of litigation, lot of letter, lot of show cause notices now. This is phase one. It has modules for litigation management, pre-GST litigation management, as well as handling audits. We've been getting some good feedback. We've had a couple of large companies which have expressed an interest to sign up, and we've also started getting feedback for building in AI ML based features in it, where similar cases can get tagged and you can actually refer back to similar case laws or advanced rulings. Auto drafting of responses and emails and things like that, which will be taken up in phase two. There is also request that a similar tool can be actually looked at for direct tax litigation management as well as license management. So those are things that's there on the roadmap, and we see this playing a bigger a very important role as GST now starts moving into more of a litigation phase.
So basically, the way to look at it is a digital reporting framework. There are many adjacent opportunities, each of which we're trying to get into in some way or the other, depending on whether the fit is there or the fit is not there. Throw it over to you.
Okay, let me. Sorry, Balu. No, there were some more questions in regards. Let me just run through it very fast. Okay.
Okay.
So one was the company recently disclosed that a large investor should come and acquire shares of the company. Did the acquired promoter shareholding or shares in the open market?
So I have one request for shareholders. Please read the filings that the company makes. The company, Shubhkam is an investor in the company. What they do is their business. What they do with the stock is their business. These are all public information. So please read the filings carefully before asking such questions. It's all there. Go ahead.
And Shubhkam did not acquire shares. They disposed of shares in the market. That's what happened.
No, Balu, what Shubhkam did, we don't know. There was some change of share, but it's not up to us to answer what Shubhkam did or did not do. It's up to Shubhkam to talk about it, and we are not Shubhkam.
Absolutely. They disclosed it because that was required by the law, but we are done.
No, but the filing was made by Shubhkam in the market.
No, we also had to make a filing because there was a requirement.
No, that's true. That's okay. But the point is, the promoter selling has not changed.
Absolutely. That is a basic point.
Okay. Go on.
Yeah. And the other question was about the disclosure management. What are the benefits, with respect to disclosure management? How many clients has it been sold to?
Deepa, short answer, because we don't have much time now.
Sure. So the short answer is that the disclosure management solution will be released now in the coming month. So we don't have any clients at this point in time. We'll get a better sense on this entire thing after the next few months. That's it.
Thank you. Next question, Balu.
No, that's from Vikas. There are a couple of others also who had asked questions.
Ask.
Okay.
Please ask.
So, some of this have been answered in the previous explanation that they've given.
But let's mention it here so that at least for the record we know the shareholders have answered.
Yeah, this is a question from Saurabh Jain. What is the range of order value for the Kuwait project where we are signed with the UAE as a partner? So we don't disclose, numbers. This is a specific project. So I can say that it is a lower range of our typical, capital market implementations. So because this is an enhancement project. That is one question. The second question is, what is the value of business I can expect from the launch of new product? I just look up, which Gautam did touch upon. And what is the value of business I can expect from acting as IRP for GST? That also Gautam did touch upon what you are trying to do. What is the indicative timeline for the rights issue? That's the question from Saurabh Jain.
The answer is very simple. The moment this call is over, the moment we feel the market's priced it, whatever manner they want to, we will then call a meeting of the rights issue committee and we'll take a decision very fast. We will not linger any longer.
Okay. And now we move to Mithun Muralidharan. He had an email, a few questions as well. What are the current order details? We have given the order book in our presentation. You can take a look at that. He's talking about the company entering the IAS segment. And no more about the future outlook. I presume could be the IRP segment, infrastructure as a service perhaps. And Gautam did
talk about that. That's been answered.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Yeah.
The new geographical expansion of business has been done in Q4 2022. Geography wise, slow, but deeper we are going. Steps taken to improve the financials for the company.
Geography wise, yes, because we have. Balu, we have actually sold a couple of licenses for SEC filings to companies in Chile, for example, which I discovered completely by chance in the course of a call. Some Chilean companies have taken our SAT product for SEC filings. So the answer is yes, we've had more geographies. Go on.
All right. Steps taken to improve the financials of the company. I again presume this must be related to our balance sheet numbers. So I did mention that our receivables as number of days of sales have come down. We have paid off employee dues. Interest cost has come down significantly this year compared to the previous year because we have moved to a lower cost, credit arrangement. And our, ARR of course has increased. So the stability of revenues has increased as well. Our ARR has increased from 40 odd crores to 47 crores in some of that. So these are questions that we have pretty much through on this count.
There was also some question about ATS and all that by somebody.
Yeah, so there was an ATS question from Vikas. So there's a question from Vikas.
Let's not miss any question, but let's ask the questions anyway.
Yeah.
I'll answer it. Follow the question.
Yeah, I'm just. In the English presentation, you just mentioned that ATS Maharashtra was acquired. Can you talk about the nature of the project? And can there be similar projects with other police forces in the country?
Absolutely. That came to us because of NASCOM. It was a free pilot that we did for the ATS Maharashtra. In fact, those of you in Bombay would be happy to, Maharashtra would be happy to know that we played a small role in ensuring that the ATS Maharashtra has a reasonable data system within their organization. ATS stands for Anti-Terror Squad. It was done about 5 years ago. It was a pro bono project at the request of NASCOM. Can it be done elsewhere across the country? Yes, but everybody wants it free. We will not do it for free. Balagwan.
Okay. In the US, a lot of municipalities are adopting HDR because of the municipal boards. Can we see the same story playing out in India as well?
Not in the next 5 years, because first the CAG law has to be passed, after which the government of India has to take note, and then things have to happen. But I don't see this happening in the next 5 years.
Okay.
Anything else?
I think we have pretty much through with this. Thank you.
Okay. One request. You know, I respect the right of every shareholder to ask questions, and I answer every question. At the same time, I only one request for that. When you send in a request for answers in the middle of whatever, you know, there's a lot of management resources spent on getting the right answer or getting the answers out. So my request to you, where the information is publicly available through our filings, please look at them, and please recognize that we are actually expending money and resources in answering each of your questions. So please, 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 I respect your right to ask questions, but please keep them to areas which have not been covered. Rohit, the floor is yours.
Thank you, sir. Rohit, sir, you are unmuted.
Okay, thank you so much for answering all those questions which were asked on email. Much appreciated. Two, three questions. So one, the order book that you mentioned of 57 crore, is it to be executed over the next financial year? Is that how it's indicated?
Not really. We said 24 crores, if I'm right. So not really. So it has an ARR component, which is for the year, and other component, which is, you know, contractual. It could be, you know, spilling over the next year as well.
Understood. So the ARR component would be roughly 50 crore, right? Including the deferred South Africa component, it should be around 50 crore. Am I right?
Yeah, 48, 49.
Okay, understood. So that was number one. So second question is, so in the past, we have discussed in detail on how the market share has evolved in Europe with SMAR coming in, right? So could we have a similar discussion on FERC mandate? I believe we had in the first phase 800 companies that came out. Has the entire filing been done by all those 800 companies under FERC? And the second question is, we also mentioned that once the first phase of FERC filing, first phase of FERC companies, once they are done with filing, in the next phase, I think the number was in large thousands or something, which are expected to file in the next couple of years or so. So could you elaborate on that market, please?
So not all 800 filed. I think number of companies actually filed was closer to 600, if I'm not mistaken. And the second phase has not started. The date has not been announced. We think it will happen next year, but I think I'll leave it to Deepta to answer the question. Deepta, you've got 2 minutes to finish the call. We'll go over time, but just keep it in mind.
So in FERC, it was close to about 700 companies, I think, that filed in the first phase. And we got a roughly a 20% market share over there. And phase two is not yet announced. So I think it's likely to be pushed back a little bit, perhaps a year down the road, but we don't know. We're waiting to hear, actually.
So one more thing I must tell you is, one more thing I must add is, it's likely that we will not work with our existing partner as far as phase two is concerned, and we will be on our own, but that's okay. As long as we have a marketing muscle to be able to do that, to be able to go for the market, we will do that. We have differences with our customer in terms of approaching, in terms of with our partner, in terms of how to approach the market. We're very happy for them. They want to go out on their own. They basically have a different model that they want to follow, which doesn't work for us. And so we basically said we'll partner. So in phase two, we will not be working with them.
But will this put at risk the existing clients that we have won there over the next few years of filing that will happen?
No, it won't.
Okay.
It won't. The existing customers are already bound by contract with both of us, and we have revenue share, which they will respect and we will respect.
Perfect. So 10% market share is great to know, great to know. That's a great achievement. So congratulations on that. And I was curious to know if the 10, so we have roughly around 70 odd companies as customers. Has the entire revenue been recognized in the last financial year, or is there something to be recognized in this financial year?
It's an annual filing, so it's recognized as an annual filing. So answer is yes, it's been recognized.
So the entire thing has been recognized as in the March number.
Let me say that, you know, as far as as far as CRC revenues are concerned, it is spread over 12 months because it's a license to use the carbon platform for token.
Okay.
Well, 1 minute. I don't know. I mean, five minutes. It is spread over 12 months. Right, the CRC filing.
Yes, yes,
Balu.
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. The revenue will be recognized over the next 12 months. It's not like whatever you've run there, you've recognized it entirely in the last financial year. Is that the right?
It starts from the date of us signing the agreement with the customer, then it's spread over 12 months.
Just to ensure that I understood correctly, so let's say the customer filed it in January and he paid us, let's say, 100 rupees, that's being spread over 12 months. You don't recognize the entire 100 in the January or February. You recognize it, let's say, 12 and a half rupees over the next 12 months. Is that correct?
For the SCRC mandate, that is right. For the SCRC mandate, that is right.
Okay. So there should be a natural increase in ARR in the next year because this will be recognized in the current coming years. Is that right?
No, I am saying the ARR of 47 that we talked about, which is reflected in this tree, it incorporates this piece of information as well.
Okay, perfect. That's helpful. And that's the last question from my end is, I mean, you talked about attrition of 20-21%. So in the context of what I see in other companies, I think that's a great number and kudos to you guys for managing it so well. How is the scenario right now? Because with the startup funding drying up, my understanding is that the talent attrition and talent war is not as heavy, as severe as it was a few months back. So could you guys discuss that a little bit, please?
You know, human beings are very simple. They are getting complicated. Once they lock themselves into a high salary, they're not going to take a lower salary to be able to move to at least find a job for a long time. They don't see the writing on the wall. And I think the startup funding has actually destroyed the whole talent acquisition process for a large number of companies. And honestly, it's quite disappointing how the whole thing has actually panned out. And competing for resources is one thing, but competing in a meaningless way has actually destroyed the market and the whole process. So there are people in my company who are getting paid 15, 20 lakh rupees who have gone off with a salary of 55, 60 lakh rupees in other companies. So it's just not tenable. It is not maintainable. It is not going to happen. So have the things improved to an extent where we're able to find people? No, not yet. I think it's getting there, but I think it's way too late. So once this funding actually happens, we will actually be able to, we're also strengthening the technology team in a very big way. You will soon see us make an announcement about a very senior technology person joining us. It'll happen soon. We're not in a position to talk about it right now. But I just mentioned that we are strengthening the technology team in a very big way. Hopefully when that happens, you will see some significant step ups in the way we look at technology. But has it improved in terms of finding people? No, it hasn't. And we're not in Bangalore, we're in Bombay. Bombay is different from Bangalore. Bangalore is much worse.
Understood. So on this people thing again, so I noticed that we are very focused on improving our marketing and sales focus, but I don't think we have a chief sales or chief marketing officer. So anything on that front as well?
So we have greatly strengthened our marketing team. Deepa, you want to talk about that? I really have some fantastic sales people on the ground, but Deepa will talk about the marketing team.
So Rohan's point is valid. We don't at this point have a chief marketing officer or the CSO, but on the individual product marketing side, we have strengthened the team. So, you know, at the product marketing level, the engine is beginning to kind of crank up and come together much better, both for Carbon as well as for GSP, which are on the Create side, the two big business on the Create side. But we will be looking to strengthen it further, both marketing and sales, and there are positions that still need to be filled in, including at
the moment. Welcome to. Rohit, please, I can't see you find your fee.
I didn't hear you, sir. Could you repeat that?
I said, Rohit, if we recommend people and we recruit them, we will pay you a finder fee. Applies to all shareholders, everybody on the call. We are open to recommendations.
Sure, sir. We'll keep that in mind. Thank you so much. That's all from my end as well. I don't have any more questions. Thank you so much for answering all the questions so patiently.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rohit.
Swami sir, there are no further questions in the queue. Over to you for closing comments.
So, thank you very much for being on the call. I think the year ahead should be much better than the year that went past, largely because, as I said, COVID is over. One last thing I want to talk to you about, which I think is very significant. You know, many people look at the SaaS opportunity as a very huge opportunity, and they look at, okay, 5% market share, 10% market share, 20% market share. Our SaaS opportunity is a very segmented opportunity. So when you look at the US SSE market, there are 5,000 companies. When you look at the European ESEF market, there are 2,500 companies or 3,000 companies. So the number of companies in each market is very small. And no single company can ever hope to dominate the market to an extent where it gets more than 15-20% market share, quite literally. One factor that worries us slightly is recently Workiva took over a company called Passreport. When I say it worries us, it's partly for the reason that they now will now have a product that is basically priced around where we probably price it. And they are also able to fix a few things that they could not have done earlier. But I think it's a great sort of it also means that we need to buckle up and literally stay on our toes to be able to compete in that market. We have not done too badly against Passreport in the last year in Europe, and we believe that we are well positioned to do a lot more. So it will cut both ways. I think while it will certainly strengthen Workiva's portfolio, I think it will also create problems of a different kind for them. So just because you acquire a company which is in a certain segment doesn't mean you'll get all the customers. So there are people talking to us. We're really happy for that. So that's where we are. So given all in all, the year that's gone past, we can really do better than this. On that note, thank you very, very much for the call. And we'll meet again in 6 months' time. We will not do quarterly calls. We will only do half-yearly calls. Thank you very much again. Bye-bye.
Thank you. On behalf of IRIS Business Services, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.